Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for March 5th, 2012, episode 351, sponsored by Omega Alpha. Good morning, horse people.
Yep, it's Monday.
All right, let's take it from the top again.
Well, good morning, everybody. Jamie, what a wild weekend here in Lexington. We went from 72 degrees and hail and tornadoes and severe thunderstorms on Friday to 6 inches of snow this morning.
It's been
been a wild weekend. yeah, we were kind of shocked to wake up and see all the snow this morning. This is the most snow we've had all year.
You know, I don't know what you can do for colic prevention in that situation, but I would say load your horse with electrolytes, give that sucker some salt. I don't know. Do something, because that is the kind of weather that makes horses colic like crazy.
We're actually not worried about colic with Beaker right now. We're kind of worried about founder. And I know that sounds funny. How can a horse founder in the middle of winter? But Jennifer normally has one or two holes left on the girth. When she went to girth him up on Friday, she had to put a girth extender on. He was so fat.
What is he getting fat on? What are you guys feeding him? Because, I mean, is the grass green? And
well,
there's really no grass.
Here's the problem. Free choice hay.
It's
really nice hay. Every horse at that farm, there are, I think, 17 horses on turnout board right now, and they're out 24/7, 365 with a big old shed. And for the most part, the only thing these horses have to eat are round bales of really nice mixed, it's like a mixture of bluegrass and orchard grass, and it's really fine. That's all they have. Every single one of them looks like a butter sculpture.
It's true.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I mean, I have to watch just what I give, you know, my warm blood, and we've got a pain horse on the farm, and those guys get fat off air. And, I mean, I can't imagine them sitting there having free choice to hay all day long. I mean, I have to separate their hay into, like, three sections, do it during the day at three different times, morning, noon, and night, because of the worry of them getting so fat. And, a drop of a hat they will. I can't imagine having the free choice round bale, but what are you going to do?
Well, the nice part, though, is more than previous years and the more typical scenario you see out here is if they do get a round bale, it's a round bale that's fit for a cow. Or they just throw, you know, three flakes out twice a day and they all look like skeletons come springtime. I think in the wintertime, I'd sooner have a horse that sheds out in the spring looking like a butterball than the more common sight with the turnout is the ribs are hanging out when the coat comes out.
Give me the ribs. I want the ribs.
Remember the pictures of the little donkey that's out there now, the tiny little miniature donkey? Well, he's even looking like a little butterball now. He's been out there. And I think the problem is, Jennifer's right, these round bales are the nicest hay I think I've ever seen. And it's in round bales, and you never see the good stuff in the round bales. This is beautiful hay. People would pay big bucks in your neck of the woods for this hay. It is beautiful.
I pay big bucks for any hay in my neck of the woods. I mean, I just grass hay right now, just to go get, it's like a Bermuda hay. is pretty good for Bermuda, and it's about a 90-pound bale, $17. $17
a
bale.
You kid? That's a great price, Jamie.
Says who? I was, when I moved here, I was paying $9 a bale for it, so I'm hating it.
I hate to tell you what she pays for these. These round bales must weigh in at, well, it just about tips the tractor over when they pick them up. It, these are the biggest round bales I've ever seen. And she pays, what, $60?
Yeah, that's less than you pay here in Lexington, Kentucky for good quality Timothy, what you're paying.
You're getting Timothy. Keyword.
True. All right, Jennifer, what's coming up on today's show?
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, we've got weekend antics and adventure stories from Glenn and Jamie, Horse Nation news headlines from Horse Nation, and the best in show of news features about horse folks from all around the interweb. And stay tuned for the ensuing entertainment juggernaut.
Thank you, Jennifer. And Jamie, you're up first.
You know, on Friday, I said that there was a big horse trial going on over here on the West Coast called Twin Rivers. And my coach, who was in North Phoenix, Scottsdale area, was actually taking her horse and driving 12 hours to go to this horse trial. And that is the problem with eventing over here in Arizona. The West Coast is you have to really drive. You have to be committed to event. And I thought that she was crazy. I said, Barb Crabo, you're taking your horse 12 hours to go do an advanced horse trial? And she's like, that's what you got to do when you live here. Well, it paid off. She finished on her dressage score of 25 and won the whole thing. So advanced horse trial winner, Barb Crabo and Jenna Reddy. Woohoo! Winners!
Does that mean she's a shoe-in for Rolex then?
I'm telling you, she has set herself up nicely this year. I mean, obviously she's qualified and to go clean on cross-country. I mean, she was already qualified anyway because she won the AECs. So she has that score, this score, so she's going to Rolex. And, I mean, you know, when you think about Rolex, think of all the Boyds and the Phillips and all the top riders that you hear of. I am so pulling for Barb, man. That is just so cool that, you know, she's got a small farm in North Scottsdale, very nice place. She's incredibly dedicated, works her butt off to get here, to get to where she is. And I'm just, you know, after a score of 25 on an advanced dressage test, I would think, I'm not going to make any crazy predictions, but I would think she's going to be a force to be reckoned with at Rolex. How about that?
Cool. Well, then, now we have somebody to root for on the morning show.
You bet.
We have our favorite pick for Rolex. We don't have one yet for the Kentucky Derby, but now we have our Rolex pick.
We have our Rolex pick. Barb Crabo and Ever Ready making their way to Lexington, Kentucky to take down Rolex. I'm excited. I'm thrilled. That's my girl. I love it. That and she single-handedly...
Go ahead.
I said not only is she my coach, she's also a therapist. So, you know, to have your therapist win Rolex, she's the one you go, I'm so scared. I don't think I can do this. And she's like, shut up. Get on your horse and go do it.
You know, Jennifer never took classes for that, but that's the way she used to treat me when she was teaching me to ride. Shut up. You don't know.
Tough love. Good. Your turn.
I'm going to get a little bit serious here for the next couple of minutes. I wanted to tell everybody about my weekend. It was quite an interesting weekend and kind of a little bit life-changing for me because of what I saw and what I experienced this weekend. And I wanted to share it with everybody today. So my daily Winnie goes out to all the good people I met in Sandy Hook, Kentucky, which is west or east of us, almost into West Virginia, in the mountains of Kentucky. And I'll tell you a little bit about that adventure. But I met some absolutely terrific people over there. And I want to talk a little bit about what happened here on Friday. You know, when we left the show on Friday, it was 70 degrees, and we knew we were looking forward to a rocky day with thunderstorms. Friday, we probably, for Jennifer and I personally, and a lot of people here in central Kentucky, all over Kentucky actually, was one of the scariest days we've had since we lived here. This was the first time, Jamie, that Jennifer and I actually got into our safe room, which is kind of in the middle of the house, with our couch cushions ready to cover our heads if we had to. It was that scary here on Friday because you saw the reports. Everybody had their TVs going. This was the first time that we actually heard, since we've lived here, we heard the tornado sirens going. And we didn't even know if there were tornado sirens, but we did hear the tornado sirens going on Friday. And there were tornadoes, as everybody knows, there were 90 to 100 tornadoes between Indiana and Kentucky and Tennessee and Alabama and North Carolina, all over the place, and even in Georgia. So it was a scary day here on Friday in the afternoon. We didn't get any work done. We had everything powered down and unplugged. We Lexington, Kentucky proper came out okay, but we knew that there were other parts of the state getting hit pretty hard. I kind of suspected that the Red Cross would be calling and that I would be deployed somewhere. And that happened about midnight on Friday night. I got the call that we were to head out to, and at this point we had went to bed and we didn't know who had gotten hit where in Kentucky. And we didn't know that that this had happened. I'm going to play a little bit of an audio for you, and I know everybody that's been watching the news had seen a little bit about West Liberty, Kentucky, and that's what I'm going to talk about here for a couple of minutes. But here's a report from WTBQ.
Good afternoon, I'm Christine Winter. Death, damage, and destruction across Kentucky after tornadoes and storms ravaged the bluegrass. Volunteers and search and rescue crews are hard at work in areas like the Morgan County community of West Liberty. ABC 36's Bill Doris shows us what they're up against and how neighbors are beginning their healing process.
Friday night, a tornado whipped through the small town of West Liberty.
We had all the women and children in the basement. We could hear the storm as it come through, and it sounded like a train, you know, the way the wind was blowing.
Fast forward to Saturday morning.
It's been pretty devastating. It's pretty bad.
The aftermath, a veritable landscape of destruction and rubble.
I mean, businesses, like the place I work, it's gone. I mean, like, that's my Aunt Eileen's house, my granny's aunt. And there's a lot of houses that's gone that I know who live there.
Where we was at last night, it didn't sound like it. I got outside and it was just, everything was flat. The trees and stuff was all flat and stuff.
And while most people here are still in a state of shock.
It's unbelievable what can happen. We never thought nothing like this would hit right directly in town. We hear it hitting out, you know, away from towns. But you never can be prepared for something like this to hit right at your homes.
Now, this community has no choice but to come together.
We just try our best, you know, to pick up the pieces, get back, ask the Lord to help us, and help anybody that needs help. Do our best to do whatever we can.
I spoke to one citizen here in West Liberty, and I asked her, how do you guys recover from this? She said, all we can do is rebuild and start all over. In West Liberty, Bill Doris, ABC 36, your local news source.
So when I got when we headed up, about five of us from the Red Cross here in Lexington headed up to open a shelter in Sandy Hook, Kentucky, which is in the mountains about 20 miles from West Liberty. They were busing everybody from West Liberty over to outlying towns because there was just nothing left of West Liberty. It was completely gone. And when we were on our way up, and let me tell you, these are the twistiest, windy roads in the mountains of Kentucky that you can drive. We drove an hour off the highway through these twisty, windy roads. If you get car sick, you will get car sick driving to West Liberty, Kentucky. On our way up there, Jamie, we saw this flatbed coming down the mountain, and that was the first indication of we knew what we were going to be in for when it had a state police car on it that looked like somebody had taken 25 sledgehammers and just beat the thing to death. Every window was broken out. The front windshield had a tree branch through the front windshield right into the driver's seat. And, wow. You know, that was kind of an eerie feeling, not knowing if the policeman was in the car at the time. But that was our first indication. And we got up to Sandy Hook, and we opened the shelter, and we had quite a few people in there from West Liberty, and we started hearing the stories of what went on. And I have to tell you about these, and you know, you lived in Georgia. You know what rural Georgia and what the rural South is like. It really made me feel good about, you know, about the heartland of America and about the kind of people that are in America today. These people of Sandy Hook, the neighboring town that was not affected, where we were set up the high school, came out in droves. We had, now there's 5 Red Cross people there, and we must have had 100 volunteers from the town of Sandy Hook. They just kept showing up at the high school with clothing. By the time noontime came around, we had 25 tables of loaded with clothing that had been donated by the people in this town. The businesses all sent food. We had more food. We didn't know what to do with the food that we had. We ran out of refrigerator space at the high school. There were people coming from an hour, 2 hour away, just loaded. We had Lee's Chicken and Kentucky Fried Chicken show up with hundreds of pounds of cooked chicken. It was just the outpouring. I've never seen that before, and I've been in shelters situations helping out before, but I've never seen the kind of response that you get when you're in a little town like that in the country or in the mountains like we were. It just was incredible. These people of this town, when that clothing came in, I didn't have to give them any instructions. They were folding and sorting it by size onto these tables. By the time noontime came around, it was all folded and sorted by size. So if somebody needed something, they could find it quickly and easily. It was just an incredible experience. At one point then, the other problem we had, and this is something that that people, unless they live through it, don't realize how tough it is. All cell phone towers had been knocked down. There was no cell phones. The only phone that we had in the school, you could only dial local. So we couldn't get word out. We couldn't call back to the Red Cross. We were on our own. People didn't know whether their families had lived or died. We had people coming in all day saying, I'm looking for so-and-so, I'm looking for so-and-so. And when they couldn't find them at our shelter, we didn't know where to send them because we didn't even know where other shelters were. There was just no communication. Pretty much all night into early in the morning, a lot of the police and fire radio towers were taken down, so they didn't have communication with their radio. So they finally got those restored earlier in the morning. So the way we had to communicate to surrounding counties, if we had to talk or try and get the word out, we actually had to call 911 dispatch, and they would call the 911 dispatch in the town that you needed to talk to, and then they would try and get a hold of somebody that could get word out. When you don't have your cell phone, you don't realize, or any phones, you don't realize how much you rely on them. You know, all day long I was getting questions from people who had possibly had lost loved ones, and I just had to say, I don't know. We just didn't know what was going on. But one point in the afternoon then, we got a call. We did get through 911 dispatch. That poor lady who was just going nuts up there called me at the school. I was her contact for the Red Cross, and she said, I got word that we need a couple of you from the Red Cross to head to West Liberty. So we actually took off in the car we had and headed over there. Well, they had military galore. This town was in the direct path of an F-3, and they had military checkpoints. We had to go through 3 checkpoints to get into town. They were not allowing anybody in unless you were a rescue worker or you were military. And so we got through. It was the most heart-wrenching, surreal experience I've ever had in my life. I've never driven through a town immediately after it had been totally wiped out. And I posted a couple of pictures. If you go to Facebook, Jamie, you'll see there's a picture, an overview picture. If you click on that and then scan through some of the pictures that we got from the town there, you'll come to a picture of a pickup truck. I want you to go to that. Anybody is listening that can get to Horses in the Morning Facebook page and click on that picture. This town was wiped out. I mean, there wasn't one building that wasn't damaged in some way in this town. And
you know what? Looking at these, oh my God. I mean, this is like what, when we went for Hurricane Katrina Animal Rescue and looking along the coastal towns, how just everything was gone. Or like one of these pictures you have, the second story is gone from a house. It's just gone. And then you go to see where, you know, stairs going up into the front of somebody's house go to nowhere because it's gone. This is just utter devastation. And just thank you for volunteering and being able to go there and help.
Well, when I was driving down Main Street, it was the weirdest thing because the only ones there were rescue workers and, you know, firemen and military. And the wires all across the road and the poles hanging across the road, and it was hard to take it all in. There was one scene that I'll never forget, and they wrote about it in some of the news stories. The police station was right on Main Street, and there was a police car that was turned up on end, and half of the police car was into the building, and all you saw was the bottom of the police car sticking out. It was the most bizarre thing. If you get to the pickup truck, the blue pickup truck, that was actually sitting in the parking lot of the hospital. And it looks like it had rolled several times. And I got to tell that story. Thank you, Jennifer. It just looked like it had rolled several times. And that looks that way because it got hit by so much debris. It didn't roll. It was sitting there in the parking lot of the hospital and got hit by that much debris. The hospital took a lot of damage. Every window was blown out. I don't know what happened to the people in the hospital. I didn't get word on that. But it was an incredible scene there that just was devastating and hard to take. I have one story from a gentleman that was staying with us. He said, I got to tell you about what happened. I want to show you some pictures. And Jamie, he had his phone. You know, I don't know what people did without picture phones. And he said, here's the tornado. He had a picture. He said, I got my family into the innermost room. They didn't have a basement. I got my family into the innermost room, which was the bathroom. Put them in the bathtub. It was his wife, his son, and his dog. Got him into the bathtub, and his cat. Got him into the bathtub, and he said, I ran out the side to make sure everybody was in their houses. I looked up, and he took this picture of the tornado coming over top the mountain and heading right to his street. He had a head-on shot of this huge tornado. And then he said, by the time I took the picture, snapped it, and looked at it, the tornado was 100 yards from my house. And it was moving that fast. And he said, I got into the bathroom, and I pried my knees against the door and held on for all I could. What was left of his house after the tornado went over was the bathroom. That was it. That was the only thing left was the four walls of the bathroom. And his knees were black and blue from pushing on the door so hard. The cat disappeared during all of this, but his family and the dog were okay. He had his dog there with him. We're okay. And then he went outside, and I don't know how he had the foresight to do this. He took the same picture after, and there was just a whole street of houses. There was just nothing there. And so he had the before and after pictures with the tornado coming and then the aftershock. And it was just what made this different than other shelters I've helped out in is other shelters I've helped out have been for floods and for ice storms and things like that, where people lost maybe property, but they didn't have loved ones they lost. That's what made this one different, was the number of people coming in looking for their loved ones who either lost loved ones or didn't know where they were or if they were alive. That's what made this situation different for me. I do have an interesting story to tell you. Right as we actually closed that shelter in Sandy Hook and we consolidated into a shelter in West Liberty, we bussed everybody over there. We had to get buses together and haul everything over. There was so much clothing. We bagged it up. All that clothing they had laid out on tables, the volunteers then bagged up and marked it and everything. It took an entire school bus packed from floor to ceiling to the front of the bus with bags of clothing. That's how much had been gathered by this little town. And then we bussed that over to the other shelter. Right as we were about to leave on the buses to head over there, a pizza delivery guy from a neighboring town showed up with 50 pizzas. And I said, let's load them on the buses and hand them out to the rescue workers as we go over. And that's what we did. Every checkpoint we came to, we handed out pizzas. They were so happy. The policemen and the military were thrilled. We handed out pizzas all the way through town, out the windows of the buses. It was one of those moments that, you know, you'll remember the rest of your life. It was just one of those things. So as far as horses are concerned, obviously, there were a lot of lives lost, and there were a lot of horses lost. I talked to several people that were at our shelter who had lost horses, there was some incredible stories that Fran Yerga found and posted on Equus.com. There was a story out of a horse named Diablo, and I believe this was in Tennessee. She actually watched out the window of her house as the tornado picked her black horse up and set him down about 100 yards away. She said it was like it was in the tornado's hand. It actually picked the horse up and set it down on its feet 100 yards away, and the horse was fine.
Wow.
She showed the divots in the ground where the horse landed. There were four big divots in the ground where the horse landed, but the horse was fine. Not so much so for a family that lives between here and it in Cookeville, Tennessee. And this was actually, it's actually on Route 75 on the way to Cincinnati. You made that drive a few times from Lexington to Cincinnati off of Route 75. There were 20 horses lost at a farm up there when a tornado went through and just destroyed everything. They only two of their show, these are quarter horse show horses, and only two of them lived. And it was interesting. There was another one too, where the inmates from the jail were released to come out and help rescue horses out of a barn in another town. So there were just all these amazing stories, but unfortunately, there were also a lot of lives and a lot of horses and pets lost. Anyway, I didn't want to bore you with all of that. It really affected me over the weekend to be there and to see and to talk to the people I talked to. So all I got to say is be thankful you have a home to sleep in tonight.
That is definitely life-changing stuff. I just posted a picture that I found on eventingnation.com from a tornado, and if you can look at it, it is a picture of a tornado coming towards two horse trailers that are parked at the top of a hill, and somebody got an amazing photo. I've never seen anything this dramatic of, you know, involved with horses and a tornado coming directly towards it. And the caption was, I hope I didn't leave my stud box in the trailer because she ain't going back to get it now. I mean, wow, it's an intense photo. So first of all, you know, thoughts and prayers to everybody out there. And Glenn, thanks for going out there and volunteering. I know that's kind of a life-changing kind of thing. And good for you for signing up. Now, can anybody sign up to be a Red Cross volunteer?
Yes, you can. You just find your local Red Cross in your area and contact them. And we're always needing volunteers. So, you know, these shelters in West Liberty are going to be open for probably a week or more, and they need volunteers for every shift of every day. And then there's a lot of training you go through. You do get a lot of training. They do prepare you for things like this. I highly recommend that. And 90999 is the, let me double check that, the Red Cross donation line is where you text to. I'm pretty sure it's 90999, and that's how you can donate $10 really quickly. I did that yesterday. Yep, 90999. Just text that to the Red Cross. It'll be put on your phone bill, and that'll go directly to disaster relief for the tornadoes that have happened here over the last couple of days. So 90999, and we appreciate all the help that you can give. All right, let's get on to a little bit happier topic today.
Well, which one would you like to take? The fact that I went horse shopping over the weekend, we have Leslie on. What do you want to do?
Let's save horse shopping because those are always funny stories. So let's save that towards the end of the show. We'll tease everybody with that, Jamie's horse shopping adventures, which is going to be a little lighter than mine. But let's go. Let's do our commercial and head off to Leslie if she's here.
All right. Well, you know, Omega Alpha is a sponsor of our show, and it is the sponsor for today's show. And we care about what we feed our horses, probably more than what we care about what we feed ourselves. That's got to be sure. Omega Alpha also cares about what goes into your horses and ponies, and that's why they use only natural formulations for enhancing equine health and performance. All of their products are made by them using the finest natural ingredients available. They are like, so, I mean, Dr. Chang, if you ever have a question, definitely email him. Go to omegaalpha.ca because he will tell you, like, you go on a joint supplement, there's not this. You want to add this in. This is the complete formulation. This is how it's digestible. The guy is brilliant. And Dr. Chang is so well respected in the industry as a pioneer of putting in the right natural ingredients together to make formulations that work for your horse. They have a wide range of products to help your horse. Actually, they can help your dog, you can have a pet. So see them all at omegaalpha.ca. That is omegaalpha.ca. And we've got our first guest on the line today, and I'm really excited to talk to her because Leslie Wiley has been one of my favorite writers on a website that I check on a daily basis called Eventing Nation. And Eventing Nation is just kind of the where you go for your eventing news. And now Leslie is the I don't know if it's pioneer is the right word, Leslie, but you are in charge of horsenation.com. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. It's so good to talk to you because I have quickly become like the biggest addict to your website. And it's awesome. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
I have had one foot in both journalism and writing for the last 10 years or so. I used to have a real job working in the newspaper and magazine in publishing and then, you know, the 9-to-5 routine was kind of cramping my style a little bit. So I quit that and started doing horses full-time, just training and teaching. But it was a little freelance on the side, and I've always been sort of on the lookout for a way to connect both of those two areas of my life and, you know, roll them into one. And so when the opportunity came along to start working with Eventing Nation and then Horse Nation, then I was all over it.
I know that John from Eventing Nation is kind of he's the ringmaster behind that, and you would take basically do some news and notes once a week. Now, how did that come about? How did he find you, or did you find him?
I've been stalking Eventing Nation and lusting over the possibility of helping them out for a long time now, and then I guess a few months ago they had a competition for to hire a new rider, and they sort of so they had a call for entries, and then they narrowed that down, and they narrowed it down. There were like a million rounds, and somehow, you know, me and another gal ended up being the last one standing, and so that's how I got that opportunity.
Gotcha, good deal. Now you live in Knoxville, Tennessee.
I do, not too far away from you guys.
No, not from Glenn. A little bit far from me. yeah, I'm in Phoenix. But so you're an eventer. What do you do? Tell us about your eventing career, your horses. What do you have? What are you doing now?
Yeah, I've got the herd whittled down to two horses at the moment, Esprit and Amadeus, and they're I've had them for I guess 2 or 3 years and Esprit is he's just making his move up. It's a big move up to prelim and
wow
and yeah and he's it, and then Amadeus is a younger horse, so he's will be making his training debut this spring, and they're both super cool horses, like huge personalities, and I love eventing, like not the dressage, you know, not as much, but all of the rest of it, I've just been doing it, hooked on it all of my life.
Leslie, I tell everybody that's not quite familiar with eventing, like my husband, he's kind of learning it, and he usually, if he's going to come to one of my competitions, he does not show up until cross country. He's somehow manages a way to figure out to avoid the dressage, and I'm like, honey, listen, dressage is the part of the competition that we have to do to get to the cross country. I swear it's like we have to prove that we can stay in an arena before they let us charge around on course. So it's just kind of a part of it. But Glenn, how awesome for an eventer is the name Amadeus? I mean,
I know. I like that. I love that name. That's pretty good.
I know. I said he has his little theme song, Amadeus, Amadeus, Amadeus.
Yeah, I'm going to have it in my head all day. Thanks for that.
I'm sorry.
So you're now writing for Horse Nation, and I loved the complete, utter amount of videos that you guys posted this past weekend, I guess. It was just the great. I mean, she posted, Glenn, My Wife Knows Everything versus The Wife Doesn't Know, one of the greatest race calls of all time. My husband was like, why are you staring at a video of a baby bunny? And I'm like, because it's cute. Look at this. And I thought, yeah, it's perfect. So how did Horse Nation get started? How did you kind of branch off from Eventing Nation?
Well, you know, I think it was an idea that John had been kicking around, you know, sort of on the back burner for a long time. And he's just got so much going on. Like, he's always working on something, and just didn't have time to really tackle it himself. And I sort of started pestering him about, you know, giving me something to do on a more full-time basis. And he was like, oh yeah, I've got, you know, what about we actually make this idea come to fruition? And you know, I think Eventing Nation has been such a hugely successful site, and he was looking for a way to take that same model and apply it to a broader audience. Neither of us really knew what a Horse Nation was going to be when we got started with it. Like, we had this sort of vague kernel of an idea, and it's still definitely work in progress. That I think is going to continue sort of organically shaping itself as in the coming months, for sure.
What do you see coming up for HorseNation.com?
You know, I think, so we're 1 month old, or just a little older than 1 month now. And we've got, so just for readers that might not be familiar with what it is, we've got, it's kind of a mixed bag of, we've got news, commentary, reader submissions, some how-to stories, training tips, videos, and just sort of the general ridiculousness that is the trademark of Eventing Nation as well. So more of that. I get emails every day from new folks that are wanting to get involved. And I think that's one thing that sort of makes the site special, is that it's very open door. It's not just, you know, a staff of a handful of editorial, writers sitting around a table deciding what the narrative for, life with horses is, you know, what we should cover. And we're getting, you know, ideas and stories from all over the country, and people who have their hand in various interests I'm not even familiar with, you know, like I would, mm-hmm. I would just have no idea to even go there with coverage. And so that's really exciting, and I'm learning a lot in the process myself.
You know, that's one of the things that happened to us when we first started this show is, and the Horse Radio Network, is we cover the wide, broad spectrum of the horse world, and people from outside the horse world think that's a small world, yet when you get detailed into it like we are, we've had hundreds of guests in this show, and we haven't touched on a lot of the things that happen in the horse world. And for you, it's going to be the same kind of learning experience. You're going to learn more than anybody doing this website yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, that's exciting. And I've been doing horses for 20 plus years now, and it's so cool that, you know, just to have that realization every day that, like, there's no way you'll ever be able to get your head around everything. And it's a truly lifelong learning experience.
I got to tell you, you had a post you posted, thank you very much, by the way, about being on the show this morning, and one of the comments on your post was, stupid school, guess I'll have to listen when I get home. Be sure to mention me. And that was a girl named McKenna that wanted to mention. So, hi, McKenna.
Hey, McKenna. McKenna is she's hilarious. She is 15 years old, and she wrote to us, and she was, you know, she's a rabid Avenging Nation fan, and she really wanted to get involved with Horse Nation, so we gave her a column on Thursdays, and it's just a huge hit. I mean, she writes about, she has this pony named Dorito that she events, and just her enthusiasm for eventing and horses and life in general really is like, it always is always a pick me up for me on Thursdays. So
Dorito's a great name for a pony.
I know, right? It's, I think her, its show name is Dorito's Cool Ranch. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I just saw her, and that's a great. It's called The Secret Life of McKenna and Dorito. It's the name of her article. So I love that. I love that. Now, just looking at this, you're right. You've got a story about the pentathlon, and then, I mean, had you ever really known anything about a pentathlon before you researched this article?
No, you know, absolutely. It's, I think I even called it, you know, the lost or the forgotten equestrian sport, because I think, you know, it seems to a lot of people, I think, like it exists on the periphery of what we do, but it's really, you know, I'm sure that for people that are actually competing in, you know, pentathlon, like that's their, you know, like that's, we're on the periphery of them. You know?
That'll be one I'm not signing up for anytime soon.
Sounds like a lot of work. I don't know.
Yeah, that's way too much work for me.
Absolutely. So, what are your competition plans coming up? Let's hear a little bit about your goals for this year between your horses and the website, and then we're gonna. Everybody, please go check out horsenation.com.
Yeah, check it out. Oh gosh, myself. I actually got to an event in Aiken at the beginning of February, because the weather's been so fantastic this year, right? But then we launched the website, and you know, my own personal horse life just had to move to the a little bit. It's been a really, and I love it. I love every minute of it, but it's been a pretty time consuming process getting this thing off the ground. I still teach some lessons and have a couple of training horses. So I was kind of like, when I, you know, went out to the barn, I just put my head down and got my lessons done in the horses that I was supposed to ride, and then came home and went back to work. So I was just, you know, so I just was with a Spurry. I've got another gal, a young rider, who's been working with Amadeus, but with a Spurry, who's like, buddy, you're just going to have to hang out in the field for a little bit, and I'll get to you. Because also I'm getting married in May, and that's, I'm never getting married again, because that is so much work.
Hold
on.
I was going to give you a hard time, because I'm sorry. How many people do we know, not in the sport of eventing, they're like, I don't have time to ride my horse. I'm working so hard. And it's like, make time. Get out there and ride your dang horse. Well, I'm sorry, but yes, I got married 2 Mays ago, and I literally wanted to kill it. I was like, let's just go to Vegas. I'm like, I'm so sick of this crap. And people are coming out of the woodwork telling me how to have a wedding. So, girl, what is the worst part of the whole wedding thing? Obviously, marrying the part is the best part. But what's your least favorite?
You know, I think I have a little bit of a non-traditional style of doing things. So there's certain, in my family is, you know, pretty traditional, and even my fiance thinks I'm a little bit too far out on the limb sometimes. So, you know, like you said, just being like, it's my party, and I'm going to, you know, in my case, we had this incident, Shoegate. What shoes I was going to wear was like a big deal. My fiance is 6'5", and I'm like 5'1", maybe.
I think that's easy. You wear pants,
so
boots,
and
heels. right? Isn't that easy?
Like,
panic boots would be.
So I'm like, I'm wearing stripper heels. I don't care what any of you guys think. I'm wearing six-inch heels. And so I found these amazing shoes. They're gold, glittery. They have and they have red flames on them. They're amazing. And so I'm like, you know, I'm wearing these shoes. I don't really. I'm just, you know, whatever else happens in the way, if you know, parts of it turn out sort of traditional, like I will be happy because I'm wearing these flaming stripper heels. And
you know, girl, let me just point out that if I can, just to quote Chris Rock a little bit, they're only really stripper heels if they're clear heels. You can see
Thank you, Jamie. I'm going to tell my mom that.
Yeah, only strippers only wear clear heels, Mom. These are not stripper heels. Look. And I totally understand because my dad was like, what church are you getting married in? And I was like, I'm getting married barefoot on the beach, Dad. And he was like, no. You have to get married in a church. And I was like, really? Well, if you find me a church that is open to the beach, I'd be more than happy to reconsider. Because I'm barefoot on the beach, whether you like it or not.
Right.
Girl, if I could give you advice, do what you want. I wanted to be barefoot. If you want to wear some flame heels, they're not stripper heels because they're not clear, you wear them, girl.
Thank you. I fully intend to.
Well, now, Leslie's going to be joining us every Monday. You're going to help us start our weekend roundup session every Monday, aren't you, with a couple of stories from Horse Nation?
Absolutely. I'm excited about it.
Cool.
No, not me. I don't think I'm going to get along with her at all. It's terrible.
Shoes. Horses. We have nothing in common, me and Jamie.
I know, right? And let me just, because I have to ask, are you going to Rolex?
You know, of course I plan my wedding around event season. So it's the weekend. My wedding's the weekend right after Rolex, which it had to fall on the same date as the Derby, but that's okay. We can have, there's TVs at the reception, so we can watch it. It's no big deal. And I'm planning to for sure. I never miss a Rolex, and I don't think just because I'm probably going to be on the verge of a nervous breakdown at that point not change a thing.
Listen, do what I did. Let me just tell you what I did. Rolex was my bachelorette party. So go out there, enjoy it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Got to do it.
Oh,
girl. Well, we can't wait to see you. We can't wait to talk to you every single Monday. Horsenation.com is the website. Everybody go check it out. Make it part of your daily required reading because if you're stuck in a cubicle at work, you're bored anyway. So might as well kill some time. Watch some videos.
Oh, yeah.
Read some good stories. And Leslie Wiley, thank you so much for joining us. Glenn, do you have anything else you want to add?
No, we'll talk to you next Monday.
Woohoo!
Fantastic. Thank you guys so much for having me on. I love your show.
Send
okay,
me a picture of those heels. Post those heels on our Facebook page.
Yeah, we want to see them.
Oh, I will. They're amazing. Okay, I will.
All right. See you, Leslie.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Awesome.
We caught her right before her wedding. Isn't that funny?
Yes. Because I remember, oh, my gosh, I was like, really, people, do you really care that much about what I'm doing? But I was shocked how every single person has an opinion about what you're going to do for your wedding. I think that was the most frustrating thing. I just was like, Chad, let's just go. Let's just go to Vegas. It's a short drive. We can get it taken care of. But we didn't. We decided to keep it together, pull it all together, and it ended up being awesome. So.
Now, imagine telling everybody that's coming to the wedding that you're going to have a medieval wedding and that the entire wedding party is going to be in costume and that we kind of were encouraging the parents and the families to come in costume. And actually about 50 people showed up in costume. And the only one that was truly excited about it was the preacher who said, I get to wear robes I've never worn before. And he was all excited about it.
That's awesome. I just told everybody, I'm like, you're going to be on the, you know, you're going to be on the beach. You might as well be barefoot. And it was just so funny. Some people would not go barefoot. And so they're.
Did anybody wear heels on the beach and, like, fall over flat in their face?
Nobody fell, but they wore heels on the beach. And, like, you could see them, like, slowly. It's like walking, like, trudging through the mud, you know, picking up one foot and putting it down. The next foot, but I'm like, y'all just take your shoes off. I'm not kidding.
Okay, now I got a question I have to ask being a guy. So you got married on the beach. You were barefoot, right?
Correct.
Did you have your nails done?
What kind of dumb question is that? Of course I did. I had fake nails. I had, like, a complete French pedicure. I had a French manicure in the front. I had 2 weeks, because then we went on our honeymoon, without touching horses. So I was able to keep my nails long for that time. Now, I did, on the way home from our honeymoon, when we were heading back to the farm, I pulled all the fake nails off on the airplane. Chad thought it was disgusting. But of course,
well, I don't know. You know, horse girls sometimes don't, you know, don't bother with that crap. So I didn't know if you were one of those that just said, I'm going au naturel, nothing.
Oh, my gosh. I did the whole I lost weight. I was, like, getting my hair did and my nails done. I had makeup. I had the whole thing. So I went for it.
All right. Let's talk about PocketStable.com. PocketStable is that website, or that iPhone app, actually, that you're going to need to keep track of your horse and what your horses, as far as their shots and their dentist visits and the farrier and all that stuff. You can find at PocketStable.com. It'll give you reminders when things are due again. You know, it's the easiest, quickest way to keep track of all of your horse's information. If you have an iPhone, you should just stop over right now. If you haven't done it yet, and you're hearing this commercials forever, for new people, just go to your app store on the iPhone and type in PocketStable. Download it. It's $3.99. It's worth it. It's cheaper than a cup of coffee, and you're going to be amazed at the kinds of things. And it even goes down as granular as what shots you're giving your horses and when they're due again. So check it out, PocketStable.com. Well, today I have a song for everybody. I thought, what would be an appropriate song? We talked about all the people who lost horses and people who's, you know, had their horses taken up in tornadoes and set back down again. And I just thought, this Love of Horses, which is the title track of Marianne Kennedy's new CD, would be appropriate for today. So this is This Love of Horses. We're going to be back with the weekend roundup. We have some racing news, too, this weekend on the way to the Kentucky Derby.
Our hearts beat the same. And though
Listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network, brought to you today by Omega Alpha. And also, thank you for bringing us the song, Pocket Stable. Now, Glenn, are you back?
I am here.
Okay, just making sure, because I know that you typed to me in the chat that you had to pee. So I didn't know if you made it back in time.
That's why we play songs, so we can go to the bathroom.
You got to do it, you know, you got to. So do you have a highlight for us before we get started on the weekend roundup?
No, let's do the weekend roundup.
It's time for the weekend roundup.
Well, you talked me into it.
All right. Well, I was just reading this story, and I was trying to do some background research to see who it actually was. Now, what I'm talking about is there is a 70-year-old rider that has just qualified for the Olympics in 2012, the London Olympics, and he is from Japan. His name is Hiroshi Huketsu, and he qualified for the spot for the London Olympics at the ripe age of 70. He's going to be 71 on March 28th, and he just won an international dressage meet in France on Thursday, so they're going to announce in the next few weeks whether he's actually going to compete in London. He actually is based in Germany. That's why he's probably awesome at dressage. Competed in the 64 Olympics in Tokyo, actually became Japan's oldest Olympian when he took part in the Beijing Olympics at the age of 67. So this would even up that. Now, I just Googled who is the oldest Olympic athlete of all time. And it says here, according to Wiki Answers, if that's, I don't know if that's true or not, but we'll just go with this. The title is held by Swedish shooter Oscar Swan, who won his sixth Olympic medal in 1920 at the age of 72. 72 years and 280 days old. So apparently he was a shooter, a Swedish shooter. So this would be pretty darn close, but definitely Japan's old athlete.
A couple sports that you could do when you were older is horses, obviously, shooting. I doubt you're going to see too many 72-year-olds running the 100, you know, the 100-meter dash. That's probably not going to happen.
Now, the oldest person to win a gold medal in the Olympics was Oscar Swan of Sweden. So it's not only it was the 100-meter team running deer shooting event in the 1912 games. I don't know what that is. That's clearly not a sport anymore. The 1912 deer shooting was apparently very popular, and he was the oldest. So there you go. That's what I have.
And he apparently this guy Huketsu competed in 64 in the Olympics in Tokyo, and then again in 2008 in Beijing when he was 67. So
I said that.
Oh, did you?
Thanks for listening.
Okay. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
And there are 41 nations that have qualified for the London 2012 Olympic Games, and Great Britain, Germany, and the Netherlands will have four participants in dressage, but there are actually seven nations that have been able to qualify in all three Olympic disciplines, and they include Australia. Hello to our Australian listeners. Canada, Great Britain, Germany, Netherlands, Sweden, and the United States will all have teams in all three of the Olympic disciplines. And, of course, that's dressage, jumping, and eventing. And the lists have come out of which nations are sending individual riders and which nations are sending teams and things like that. And this will all be hashed out over the next couple of weeks as well.
Well, good luck to everybody that is qualified. My gosh, it's can you imagine being named to be an Olympic athlete? Is there anything that kids dream about? I mean, when I was riding at the age of, you know, started at the age of six, I was like, I'm going to be an Olympian. And to be named as an Olympic rider has just got to be one of the most amazing feelings ever. Did you ever aspire to be an Olympian for anything, Glenn?
Honestly, no. Never thought I was that good at anything that involved athletic ability.
I don't know, Glenn. You'd be a hell of a curler, okay?
I probably could do that. That'd be something I would probably try. I was a tennis player, and the tennis was the thing I played the most, and probably played, you know, I still play tennis, but I just knew I was bad. You know, I always had to play number one on the high school tennis team, and when you play number one on the tennis team, you're playing up against the kids who are the trust fund kids who have lessons every day and play at the country club all the time. So basically, I spent my entire tennis career being creamed. I mean, creamed. So, yeah, I had no aspirations of anything when it came to sports.
So most people, that would make them work harder. You, it just made you want to quit.
Yeah, all pretty right. much.
Speaking
on
of
our
tennis
team, we were so bad, we fought for the number two spot. You never wanted to be number one because that's where the really good players were. You always wanted to be number two because at least you had a shot. So we were always fighting to lose those games to get into the number one spot.
I find that the best way to lose a tennis game, or my mom made me take tennis lessons as a kid, and with a tennis coach. And I think I've told this before. My friend Mariah and I, we hated taking tennis lessons, and all the moms were up there looking at the cute tennis coach. So Mariah and I, all we did was try to hit it out of the park. So every time he would serve it to us, we would just try to hit it over the fence. And he would get so – he was trying to be calm in front of the parents, and he was like, listen, Jamie. He was like Spanish or something. He's like, do not hit the ball so hard. Don't hit it so hard. Just tap it back over to me. Hit it to me. And it's like, okay, here you go. Bam! Home run! I didn't take lessons for very long, but I was reminded of that this past weekend when Chad's watching sports, and it's Roger Federer, who's, like, amazing. So that's all I really know about tennis is that guy's awesome because he won another tournament.
You're going to have to learn a little bit about tennis. Who's the tennis player that's going to be on Dancing with the Stars?
I think it was. I don't know. I don't really have to learn anything about tennis to watch Dancing with the Stars. So I mean,
it should be good. You would think they would have rhythm and stuff. You know?
I would think so. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. You never know. Sometimes people get a little bit older and they've been an athlete forever. They get a little stiff. Hey, speaking of athletes and racing, I didn't really talk about racing, but dancing. We're going to go to racing. Hanson, who is one of the most spectacular-looking thoroughbreds I think I have ever seen. Hanson is like a steely gray, silver thoroughbred, and he's 3 years old. Well, he has maintained his status as the Kentucky Derby favorite, as one of the Kentucky Derby favorites, because he actually won in a decisive victory, the $400,000 Gotham Stakes on Saturday. So do you have the audio there, Glenn?
And they're off in the Gotham, and it was a good beginning for Hanson from that outside post, but it's Mon who's got the early lead with Pretension and Maya Donis down at the rail. Dan and Sheila runs in fourth. On the outside is King and Crusader in fifth. Hanson will be forced very wide going into that clubhouse turn. It's Mon narrowly over King and Crusader on the outside. Maya Donis down at the rail. In between horses, Dan and Sheila, and now Hanson moves up from the outside. Hanson now takes third. Then it's Maya Donis and Dan and Sheila. Pretension is racing in sixth. The Maiden, Suns Out, Guns Out on the outside in seventh. Raconteur races in eighth. And Tiger Walk is in ninth. Then it's Done Talking in tenth. Down at the rail is Steel Case in 11th. Side Road is 12th. And Finnegan's Wake is the trailer. The quarter went in 23-3. And the 13 three-year-olds head up the backstretch. It's King and Crusader by a half length over the juvenile champion Hansen. My Adonis has now moved to the outside in third. Pretension is fourth. Rockin' Tear has gained ground at the fifth, 5 lengths off the lead. The half mile went in 47-2. Farther back, it's Dan and Sheila and Sun's Out, Guns Out. Here's Hansen now to challenge King and Crusader for the lead. Hansen on the outside takes over. 3/4 in 1:11-3. Hansen's the one to catch as they turn for home. On the outside is My Adonis. Hansen may have ducked in a little bit there, but he's got the lead over My Adonis. Pretension now moves to third. King and Crusader back and forth. And Rockin' Tour, they pass the eighth pole. And it's Hansen with a 3-length lead. My Adonis giving chase. But it's Hansen to take the 2012 Gotham Stakes.
Woohoo! Hansen, yay! You needed some applause or something at the end there.
I didn't know if you were rooting for Hansen or not. So.
Oh, well, yeah, whatever. I mean, you know, it's just good to see these guys that are Derby kids. I mean, Hansen, if you recall, won the Breeders' Cup. Juvenile, so he's just like Uncle Mo did, and so he's slated to be one of the favorites. I don't think he is the favorite, and you know, my opinion is the Derby's going to be a little far for him, but I have eaten crow before, and I've been wrong once or twice, so you never know. It is good to keep up to date on all these horses, and one other horse racing for you, Glenn, story, so I can just keep them all together here. Your girl, Rosie Napravnik.
The jockey.
She is a female jockey, and she was like a neck short of tying the record for 6 wins in one day this past weekend. Yes, she was on a horse. Let's see. The first horse she won a race with this weekend was Hello Sailor, and then she won with Baby a Fleet. And then she won with Herbal Prospector in the fifth, Caroline's Cutie in the seventh, Small Kitchen in the ninth, and then she went in with Pink. Let's see, can you name show? She was on Pink Pony South. Pink Pony is an appropriate dance club in Georgia. Pink Pony South, 3 lengths. She closed 3 lengths in the final furlong, but finished second to a 62-1 shot named Wedding Slippers. Stripper heels, same thing. So Rosie Napravnik was so close to tying the record with 6 wins in one day at the fairground.
That's
how
incredible.
Amazing is that?
That's Holy. Just incredible. That just never happened.
She is apparently the runaway leader in the jockey standings at fairgrounds with 88 victories. The next jockey close to her is James Graham with 65. So congratulations to Rosie. You're so close, but that is just a ridiculous statistic. And can you imagine losing it by a neck? Oh, shoulda, coulda, woulda.
All right. You know how we always have stories about horse rescues? Well, this time we have a story about a rider who was trapped. This was in England. And this is a little bit of a different situation. She decided to take this Shire out for a ride, and apparently on this trail that everybody is used to. She was an accomplished rider, and the Shire apparently had been out before. But, you know, we're talking Shire, so this is a big horse. And what happened was she was taking the Shire out on the trail, and her name was Sarah Bennett, and she's taking this Shire out on the trail, and the Shire slipped and fell on top of her. Well, it put her in such a way that she was at the horse's feet, and I guess her legs were trapped underneath the horse, and her head and her chest and everything were at the horse's feet. Well, the horse was having trouble getting up, and so she had her phone along. You know, we always say about bringing the phone along. She had her phone along. She called her friends who came out from the barn. Well, what they were worried about is that the Shire started to try and get up, that it would crush her, that this 2,000-pound horse would step on her and break her face or chest or whatever. So their thought was, they called 911, they called the fire department. Their thought was to try and keep the Shire down. And so they, I guess, were sitting on the Shire to try and keep the Shire down. Now, this is 2,000 pounds laying on this lady, but they thought it would be better than getting her crushed. Now, we're going to have a conversation about this because I'd really like to know what your opinion is. What ended up happening was the Shire threw everybody off and managed to get himself up but missed the lady. So all she ended up having was a broken wrist out of this whole thing, and she's fine. They did lifelight her out to the hospital, and you know, to check her out, and everything was fine. She's okay. The Shire's okay. Everybody's okay. So what do you do in a situation like that where you're laying at the horse's feet, and yet you can't get up because the horse is laying on top of you? What do you do?
Well, I certainly don't think that to have everybody jump on the Shire who is laying on you is a good idea. I mean, seriously, a horse falls. What is the first thing the horse wants to do? It wants to get up. Now, you know, it doesn't say whether this woman was wearing a helmet, and she must be maybe a little irresponsible. But apparently, you know, the horse slips, trips and falls on her. Why would anybody think, sit on it, keep it laying down on the woman? No, the first thing you do is get the horse up. You know,
if I'm at the horse's feet and this horse is going to flail, you know what size Shire feet are, they're the size of pipe weights. If this horse is going to flail around when getting up, which is what they do, I don't want it crushing my head either. I don't know. I might argue with you about this one. I might say, you know, get a vet out here to tranquilize the horse so I can get, you know, get out from underneath it. I don't know. That's a tough call, though, Dizzy.
I need pictures, but because I just cannot even imagine what would make you continue to lay underneath a 2,000-pound horse when it could get up.
I can tell you what, though. Jennifer had this situation in the barn where she ended up, the horse fell down, slipped on the aisle of the barn, and she ended up under the horse's feet, and it was not good for her head when that horse tried to get up because it got her in the chest and got her on the top of the head, and she wasn't riding. She was just leading the horse in. So she ended up with, you know, 14 staples in her top of her head, the shape of a horseshoe.
I could see that. And first of all, she's out riding on a trail. She's not leading it down the concrete barn aisle, you know?
How much do
horses flail around? You know, I'd be like, get up, clear out. I don't know. It just seems such a bizarre story. Like, the horse went down, and they're like, let's keep it down. We're going to jump on it and hold it down and call the fire department. I guess I don't really understand exactly what happened, because there is not one part of me that would be like, just keep it on top of me. Just leave it here. No, I'd be like, get the thing off me now.
And Jennifer just made a good point in our chat. She said, you could have been the entire front line of the Packers and sit on the Shire, and he's going to get up if he wants to. And that's so true.
Exactly. I mean, really. I don't know how you would keep a 2,000-pound horse down jumping on their head. And I just can't imagine any situation where you would like to lay underneath a 2,000-pound horse. Get this sucker off me now.
And we continue with the news here, and then we're going to get to your weekend, too. I just want to say, Leslie from Horse Nation, if you're still listening, give us a call back real quick. Give us a call back if you're still listening. One other thing, couple other things. One is that they did confirm, talking about last week, we did our little tribute to Davy Jones. They did confirm that he spent the final few moments of his life where he loved to be, and that was with his horses in the riding stables. He did die in his riding stables of a massive heart attack. But, you know, there was some talk that he was actually, you know, died in the house and in his sleep. That was not true. He apparently had spent the entire weekend with his family, and they had gone out horseback riding a bunch of times, and it was the following morning then that he died of a heart attack in the stables with his horses. So if any horse person knows that if there's a place they would like to be when they die, it's where he died. So I think he died where any horse person would want to be. Am I wrong about that?
No. Definitely not. If you're going to go, I'd rather go with the horses. I had a woman that I rode with in Atlanta, kept my horse at her house, and this was definitely devastating because I'd been out with her all morning. An amazing dressage woman. And we left as she was, my friend Colleen and I, we were at her barn, and we left as she was packing up her horse. And apparently after we left, she went down, was riding a horse, had a heart attack while on her horse, and died sitting on her horse. And, you know, she was close to 70. And you know, the whole funeral and everything was devastating and it was very sad. But having a little more perspective on it a couple of years later, you realize that, I mean, my God, if you're going to go, you know, if it's your time and the good Lord's calling you home, I'm going to be sitting on my horse when it happens, if I could pick. So there you go. That's what I was thinking. So when Davy Jones, a horseman through and through since he was a kid, you know, if you're going to go, go in the barn. Sounds like, a, you know, if it's your time, it go somewhere pleasant. What do you think?
I agree. I totally agree. Well, let's prevent some horses from going somewhere pleasant by telling you that Country Buffet Horse Feed has been recalled. And this is out of the company is Western Feed LLC. Most of this feed is provided in Nebraska and Wyoming. And it has an unfortunate word on the packaging. This time it's called Payback, was the name of the packaging. I don't know what that exactly means, but it's Country Buffet, 14% feed. There were two lots of it that's being recalled because it may contain. Oh, you do the hard words, Jamie. What's that word?
Yeah, I'm not going to be any good better at this, but monensin sodium. Monensin. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but apparently it's something that they put into cattle feed and poultry feed, and it can be fatal to horses if it's fed at significantly high levels, and apparently some of it got into these bags, and they did have some horses die from it. So just want to make sure that if you live in that area and you use Country Buffet horse feed, go online and check and make sure you're not using the packaging or the runs that were from these lots. So check that out. They have lot numbers and stuff available online.
This is awful. That's just awful. So, yeah, definitely not.
I have something that's not awful.
Tell me.
A royal hottie.
Oh,
a pretty royalty. And that's the Princess Charlotte of Monaco, who is actually Grace Kelly's granddaughter, just got a contract with Gucci. And the only reason I bring this up, she's going to become Gucci's spokesmodel. And the only reason I bring this up is she's a very accomplished equestrian who has won numerous trophies, it says. And the other reason I bring it up is she's just plain hot. Hot, hot, hot.
Is there a horse connection to this? Is there some reason that you're telling us?
She rides and she's an accomplished equestrian and she's hot.
Okay, gotcha. That's it then. Okay, good news. Let's move on, shall we?
We're going to move on, and I'll tell you where we're moving on to, Jamie. Changing plans. We have Leslie back on the line because I need to talk to her about her stripper shoes, because she posted a picture on our Facebook page. And now, as a guy who's a little bit older, who's thinking about what a girl might be wearing to a wedding, Leslie, are you there?
I'm here. Jamie said they were not stripper shoes. I think we have a problem.
Probably going to disagree with me, but I'm kind of looking at these shoes and thinking they look like stripper shoes to me.
Well, Jamie said no. Jamie quoted Chris Rock, right?
Yes,
said they're not stripper heels unless they're clear.
Yes.
I'm gonna take that one to the bank.
Strippers wear clear heels, Glenn. These are not clear heels, okay? These are some hot shoes. They're gold with like.
Well, they're hot because they have bright red flames all over them.
They are so hot, girl. You own them. You wear them.
I don't know why my mom doesn't like them.
I kind of do know why she doesn't like them, actually.
You need to put this up on horsenation.com and do a survey. Should I wear these shoes to my wedding? My mom hates them and says they're stripper heels, but Jamie says that stripper heels are clear heels. And so these are obviously not stripper heels, okay? So but you need to put that up on your
site. That is such a good idea. I'll put it to the people. Put it to a vote.
Exactly.
All right.
And then at the end,
voting,
you do what you want.
I'm kind of voting that they're stripper heels. I'm kind of thinking that Jamie's mom, who listens to the show every day, is going to be voting that they're stripper heels, too. Kind of thinking.
She will love them.
I will let Jamie's mom borrow them too. Thank you.
Listen here, Leslie. Let me tell you that when I got married, I was like, I'm going to be on a beach. And this dress that I bought had a train on the end, and I was like, cut it off. They were like, what? You can't cut off the train. I'm like, cut it off. I don't want anything dragging behind me. So I am with you, sister. You do whatever you want. Now, bless your heart for being able to walk in these things, because, my God, I'd fall over.
Well, that's questionable. I don't know about that, but I will look hot. I will look super hot falling on my face.
Video that. We'll make $1 million on YouTube. Or wait, we don't get paid for those. So there you go. You'll have 1 million hits anyway. Phil, put them up on horsenation.com. I cannot wait to see these. I am going to vote wear them, sister. Do it.
Thank you. Thank you for your support, Jamie.
Shut up, Glenn. And you don't get to comment on them, excuse.
I'm with you. Dad, I'm with you. If you're listening right now, you have me on your side.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Well, put it
out
there.
Let me clarify something. Not that I've ever been to a strip club and seen stripper heels. Just saying.
I'm sure you haven't.
No,
I'm going to Google. I'm going to Google stripper heels and see what comes up.
And you'll get this picture of this
images. Oh my God! If you Google stripper heels and you look at images, everything is a clear heel.
Really?
Take that, Glenn.
Yes. Google stripper heels hit images, and even some of the clear heels say tips on them. We want tips. And then dollar bills in the heels. Come on.
Ooh, I want some of those. We're going to wear this to my wedding. Just like, I'm the bride. Put some money in. Tips.
I love it. I love it. Well, thanks. I love the shoes. Thanks for posting the picture, and keep us up to date on what you end up doing.
Okay, I sure will. Thank you, guys.
All right, bye. Bye. Glenn, did you Google stripper heels?
No, I was afraid of what I would get. Now, I do want to, I'm kind of curious why they wear clear heels. Do you think that's because they don't want you looking at their shoes?
It doesn't matter why. It's just what they do. Let's get a stripper on the show and ask. Excuse me, I have a question for you. Why do you wear clear, why do all strippers wear clear heels? I don't know, but exactly. That's just the way it is. I don't make the rules. I just follow them, and these are not stripper heels.
Well, you know what? We're playing running out of time, Jamie. Can we talk about your shopping tomorrow morning first thing?
You know, it's really not that exciting. I'll just tell you that, you know what? When you're selling a horse and your horse is lame, obviously lame, do not try to pass it off to me. Like, seriously? That horse is so, they're like, we just really wanted to trail ride. That's because it can't trot, because it is so lame. So that was really the whole gist of the horse shopping yesterday, was lame horses repeatedly everywhere. Boom, 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 boom. Lame horse everywhere. So we'll get into it a little bit more in depth and talk a little bit more about some of the other ones. But that was the main gist of it, was if your horse is lame, just tell me. Don't try to fool me, okay? I'm not going to buy it.
Between you and Helena, you could write a book on horse shopping. There's no question about that. And before we go, Jennifer said, and if you think about this carefully, it's true. What kind of heels was Cinderella wearing?
Glass, not plastic.
Clear. Yeah. Clear. They were clear. So does that make Cinderella a stripper? Saying.
You know, if the shoe fits.
And on that note, everybody, thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern.
Bay, neuter, and yell, people.
If the shoe fits.
I mean, booyah. That was the best.